Thank you. Okay, the next owner will be this Steve, the owner of this beautiful chipmunk behind me. And Steve, come on up. And
thank you, Jim. Well, it's nice to see you all out here. Thank you for coming. A couple of smatterings of chipmunk owners. Thank you for being here today. A few more. I like that. Anyway, yeah, the chipmunk is a beautiful airplane and wonderful to fly. And if any of you who are pilots have a chance to grab some stick time in a chipmunk, you don't want to pass that up because it's just a delightful aircraft to fly. It was a Tiger Moth replacement, and it first came into existence in its first flight in 1946. Now, next year is going to be the 70th anniversary of the chipmunk, and we are going to get as many of them here as possible. So those of you that were clapping your hands, if you have one, plan on getting it here next year. We're hoping to have 35 or 40 of them here. This year we have three. So we'd love to see them come out in force next year. There were 1,283 of them produced between 1947 and 1956. Most of them, 1,000 of them, were British, 200 or so Canadian, and the rest Portuguese. And then from there, they were used to train cadets really at other countries as they were sold off around the world after that. The primary purpose for this aircraft was to train cadets or pilots for the military. It was a primary training platform used for the RAF and the RCAF initially. This particular aircraft was built in 1943. It was originally built to be used in England at Oxford at the University Air Squadron and served there for a number of years. It's got time in the air shows there. And actually, I stay in continual contact with one of the cadets that got his primary flight training in this very aircraft. He still lives in England. I'm trying to get him over here so that we can go flying in his old mount, but I haven't been able to get him back here yet. A wonderful man, a retired surgeon now, but he actually sent me pictures of his logbook that shows this particular aircraft in there, and that was just a delight. And really, that just to speak to that, those of you considering flying warbirds, you know, you don't really own it. You just get to be a part of it for a while. It's a huge piece of history that predates you, and when you sit in it, you just kind of take in the scent and the smell, the feel of it, and just appreciate the opportunity to be in this rare place and know that it was a contributing factor in training military pilots around the world. It's just a beautiful, wonderful experience. I hope you get to do that. Take advantage of it. I should clarify that I'm listed as the owner of this aircraft, and I'm not the owner. Jim and Kathy Reed own this plane. They keep it, they maintain it, and I get to fly it. So that's kind of a wonderful deal for me. It's because of their generosity that I have the privilege of flying this airplane. And airplanes, this particular aircraft is just an absolute delight to fly. It loves to be upside down. It's aerobatic, loves to do loops and basic aerobatics. We don't stress it very much, but it loves to barrel roll, and it loves to do loops, and you want to always keep it on the positive side, because if you go in the slightest bit negative with it, it'll start to cough and choke, and if you stay negative too long, the engine will quit altogether, which really freaks out the guy in back. So you don't want to do that. As soon as you turn it over and get some positive G's, that engine kicks right back in, and it's a non-event. But truly a delightful airplane to fly. It's a little bit hard to find these aircraft. There are not a lot of them out for sale. And I've not found, I think there's one in Europe that you can get some time renting, but it's the only one I'm aware of in the world. And so they're actually kind of hard to find. If you're interested in grabbing a chipmunk, keep your eyes open, get to know people in the chipmunk community, especially online, and then put your name out there. And if you are ready to go and one comes available, maybe you can grab one. Parts are not typically difficult to find, depending on the part. Some of them are terribly difficult to find. So that can be a bit of an issue also, because it's British. It runs differently. The prop turns the wrong way, and some of the gauges turn the wrong way. And of course, some of you who are British would take issue with me on that. But it's a great airplane, and I would just encourage anybody that has a chance to fly one to take advantage of it and grab that stick time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve. Awesome. Thank you very much, Steve. Okay, the last owner is Kurt Landis from the windswept fields of Texas. And for him, this is just a light breeze today. But he brought his beautiful PT-22, and he'll tell you all about it. Thank you, Kurt.
Yeah, let's see. Wow. The PT-22 was developed from the Ryan STA, which was a sport plane in the 30s. And they had a Menasco engine on them, an inline inverted engine, beautiful fairings on the landing gear, beautiful wheel pants, just a very sexy airplane. I wanted one of these forever. No good reason to have one, but I wanted it. So military requirements added about 400 pounds to the airplane over the STA. The Menasco was replaced with the Kenner radial engine. The early models had the fairings and the wheel pants on them, but after a couple of student landings, they didn't have them anymore, so they just quit putting them on the later versions. You kind of got to want to play with one of these to have them. We talked about, Sam's talking about the 300-mile trip. I took 11 and a half hours and 7 fuel stops to get here. The Kenner 55 engine doesn't have any oil to the top of the engine. Every 3 hours, you have to grease the rockers and the push rods. So you only have an hour and a half fuel, so every other fuel stop, you're greasing the engine. No electrical system. You have to prop it. The other thing about this plane, and I also have an L4, it's got a very high wing loading, so it flies more like a T6, more like the bigger planes that they flew later. If you botch an approach, it's going to bite you. It's got 4 degrees of sweep back on the wing, so you got to keep it coordinated, or it'll get a little ugly with you. This plane was accepted by the military in February of 42. It was surplused in 44. They had a disproportionately high accident rate in these planes. It's a great sport plane, but I can't imagine being a 19-year-old with 5 hours and being turned loose in it. You never make a quick fuel stop. You can stop at a rural airport with a card pump and nobody there, and it's going to be an hour because people are going to pull in off the road and ask questions. What else do you want to know? The kind of the same thing Jim was saying earlier. My older grandson's 10. This is his 7th Osh. Maybe he'll fly it at the 100th show.
Thank you, Kurt.
Jim, I want to thank you for helping out today. Very interesting program. You did a great job. Thank you so
much. Thank you, Dan. It's been my honor. Thank you.
I'm going to introduce my next guest by asking you another question. How many of you know that there were black aviators in World War II who were not Tuskegee Airmen? How many of you know that? Very few. Well, I'm one of them. I don't know it. I did not know it until I met her. And the great philosopher Yogi Berra said, if you done it, it ain't bragging. And I have done it in spades because of Connie and my brother Ed. I got to fly the EA's B-17 for 20 years and went all over this great country of ours. I went 47 out of the lower 48 and visited places I never would have seen because of that airplane. And I met so many heroes in my life, and we're going to talk about that, about another hero I met. And I'm going to introduce my guest right now. And her bio is pretty impressive. Her name is Karen Taylor. She is a well-known author, award-winning producer, director, and writer for CBS News 60 Minutes. She also wrote for ABC News' Close-Up program and PBS's Frontline, and has been nominated and has won several awards, including Emmys. Are you humbled yet? I am. Ladies and gentlemen, may I present Karen Taylor. I had dinner with Karen last night at one of my favorite places here in Oshkosh. I guess I shouldn't mention, but anyway, we had a good time, and she's a talker. Now, I tell you what, that's what she does. She teaches communication for various programs and various companies, but again, Karen Taylor.
Hi. Is my mic on?
Yeah.
Oh, it is. How are you? I am thrilled to be here. I am carrying the baton for my dad, Major Welton I. Taylor, who came to Oshkosh many years in a row while he was alive, and he passed in 2012. But my father was dedicated to getting the word out about the liaison pilots. He was concerned that most people had never heard of liaison pilots, and it was his mission to tell the world what they had done. I learned quite a bit about him and about liaison pilots because I edited his World War II memoir, Two Steps from Glory, which we'll be selling in the bookstore after this presentation. And so I learned an awful lot about my father, which was a blessing. I mean, most people don't get to hear all their parents' war stories. A lot of people who served in the war don't like to talk about it. And so I was very fortunate. Dan says, I'm a talker. I came by it honestly. My father could talk your ear off. And a lot of the people here who are on the flight line who have planes have probably met him. Just about everybody I've spoken with here, when I mentioned his name was Welton Taylor, an unusual name. They remember him, and they remember him sharing stories from the war. I am picking up where he left off. I've done quite a bit of research on liaison pilots since Dad died, and I've been pretty amazed. I know the little documentary that Sleeping Dog Productions showed you at the beginning of the presentation covered some of the things that the liaison pilots did. But I like to think of them as being like helicopters years before the helicopter was invented. They were our human drones. They were the eyes and the ears of the artillery. And their primary job, as you know, was to fly over the battlefield, dodge Messerschmitts and anti-aircraft fire, figure out where the enemy was, and then call in the artillery and rain shells down on the enemy's heads. But I've discovered they did so many other things